a little Kevin Burke for you. Okay, here we are. What we just heard was Kevin Burke playing for us. We have a little bit of news, and then a special person is here with us. Let's do the news. Let's start with we'll start with Ireland. This is from the Irish Republican News. The Loughlin Island families demand truth and justice. Families of six Catholics murdered in a county down pub by Unionist paramilitaries 12 years ago have accused police of protecting those involved in the killings. The attack at the Heights Bar sent shockwaves throughout the world and was condemned by Pope John Paul II and the Queen. At a press conference in Belfast, relatives of those who died in the massacre said it was clear the RUC police had colluded with the UVF murder gang responsible for the slaughter. Their statement came on the back of revelations that the car used in the murders, which was provided by an RUC agent, was later crushed by the RUC, preventing the recovery of crucial forensic evidence. Eamon Byrne, Barney Green, Malcolm Jenkinson, Daniel McCraner, Patrick O'Pare, and Adrian Rogan died in the attack on the Heights Bar in June of 1994. They were watching Ireland play Italy in a World Cup game when the gunman struck. Neil Murphy, a solicitor for the Loughlin Island families, told a packed press conference that a checkmate rifle used in the killings as part of the South African weapons consignment brought into the north by British Army agent Brian Nelson. British forces knew of the arms shipments and did not prevent them from reaching Ireland. There is a hound here someplace. It was revealed that the RUC, which is now changed their name to the Police Service of Northern Ireland, refused to carry out DNA tests on 177 items connected with the investigation until 2005. It also emerged that PSNI is still refusing to reveal whether any of the suspects or the eight people questioned about the attack have been used for intelligence purposes. We also have the maneuvering going on in Stormont. According to the BBC, the assembly failure will cost the dupes, the Democratic Unionist Party. This is the BBC says failure to agree to a return to devolution in November could cost the DUP more than £1.5 million, a Northern Ireland office document has said. The party would lose money to fund the office costs of DUP assembly members. It also claims the party's policy and press operations would be severely affected. DUP leader Ian Paisley, however, accused the government of blackmail and said the tactic would not work. Even if we were down and out and had no money whatsoever, we would not be selling the country short for the sake of a pound, he said. Peter Hain, that's the direct ruler, has demonstrated his filthy blackmailing tactics, and he will find we will never bow the knee to money and be slaves to the British government. That is Unionist leader Ian Paisley talking, folks. Also, as you know, as regular listeners know, we have been covering the rendition flights, some of which had taken off and landed at Shannon Airport. The Europe's human rights body has passed a resolution accusing European states of colluding with the CIA on secret flights transferring terror suspects. Council of Europe says some countries are staging posts for illegal flights and others let the U.S. abduct suspects from their soil. Council of Europe Secretary General Terry Davis said blanket denials from member states were not adequate responses in the light of the evidence assembled. He added that his own inquiries had revealed that renditions could happen in any Council of Europe member state because none had adequate legal safeguards to prevent them. Well, from there, I think we'll go to, let's go to Miami. As you know, there's been a roundup of what we call the Miami 7, I guess, terror suspects. I'm going to mention this. It's been talked about elsewhere on KABU, but I'm going to mention it because we have been covering the Haitian struggle. And six of these seven men are either Haitian or Haitian-Americans. Now, we can compare the status of Haitians, in fact, we have in the past, to the privileges given the Cuban exiles. But in this case, these guys, these Haitian Americans, were set up by a person claiming to be an agent of Al-Qaeda. And so through him, the actually U.S. has provided boots and a camera to these men. And we might ask who initiated the plot. And the stories I've seen was like they came to him, but how do they know who to come to if they wanted to do something crazy like that? So this is something we will be keeping our eye on in the future. An interesting thing is that these seven men have been sort of portrayed as some kind of Muslims, but not so, according to Juan Cole, who is a professor at the University of Michigan. He says that they're apparently an offshoot of a group called the New York Moors, and they call themselves the Seas of David, and that they wore black uniforms with a Star of David arm patch, and they also belonged to something called the Order of Melchizedek. And this, I guess, goes back to Old Testament genealogy, you know, different lines of priesthood. And it gets very convoluted, and it's really very irrelevant to all the things going on in today's world. But these guys are sort of, they are some kind of a cult, apparently. They are not Muslims, and somehow they got ensnared in some harebrained scheme. They somehow thought that they were going to bring down the Sears Tower in Chicago. Also, in Australia, Rupert Murdoch was heckled by some members of the audience when he was named the most influential Australian of all time, despite being an American citizen. Mr. Murdoch is the chairman and chief executive of News Corporation, one of the world's largest media empires. And he headed a list of 100 notable Australians compiled by the Bulletin magazine. His business interests include the Times, the Sun, the American Fox film and television conglomerate. And he said at the award lunch that he was, quote, very humbled. He told reporters in Sydney that there were others on the list who had, quote, done a great deal more to improve the whole world. Well, that goes without saying, I think. Anyway, the expression of modesty did not impress some members of the audience. A local union activist, an environmental campaigner, who interrupted him, asked, how can the most influential Australian of all time be an American? Mr. Murdoch was born in Melbourne. He relinquished his Australian citizenship in 1985 because that was the only way he could be able to own U.S. television stations. Also, dealing with Australia, I ran across a very interesting article by John Pilger, who is an Australian himself. He is a reporter and he's a filmmaker. And if you've been following the news, there's been quite a lot of turmoil in East Timor recently. And the Prime Minister, I think he has finally decided to step down. He's been under a lot of pressure to step down. And in the news that we've been hearing is that it's sort of like a regional or ethnic struggle between East Timorians and West Timorians. And it has to do with he cashiered some people in the army. But according to John Pilger, the Prime Minister, Mari Alkatiri, is a economic nationalist who opposes privatization and interference by the World Bank. He's a secular Muslim in a largely Roman Catholic country. Above all, he's an anti-imperialist who has stood up to the bullying demands of the Howard government of Australia for an undue share of the oil and gas spoils of the Timor Gap. Now, this is sort of a dirty deal between Australia and Indonesia back in 1994, in which this was before East Timor came into existence. And they sort of divided up this oil field between them. And here is East Timor now, one of the poorest nations in the world, and they are being screwed out of their little oil pittance by Australia, which has sort of taken on the role of the sort of the U.S. Gendarme in that part of the world. And it's really a travesty after all that East Timor has been through that you come to this. And if it wasn't for John Pilger's article, I would have been unaware of a lot of the stuff that is going on. So anyway, I think now we will turn to our guest. Welcome to you.
Oh, thanks very much.
Maura is Aiko? I think it is. Can you hear it?
I can't, but I'll take your word for it.
I have it on. It's microphone two.
That's fine.
Yeah.
Well, it's good to be back.
It's
here.
Great to have you.
In case those of you listening don't remember the sound of my voice, it's been a while. This is Maura Cullen. And first of all, I want to say thanks very much to Per Fogarin for doing such a bang-up job of taking care of my baby for me while I've been away. Radio Free Ireland.
Only dropped it a few times.
She's tough, you know, she's tough. And Radio Free Ireland's been in great hands. And thanks very much, Per.
Happy to do it.
Well, I appreciate the work that you do. And I understand there's a rumour you might be getting your federal licence to actually do this sometime soon.
Well, I've been getting trained by some very capable people here at KABU. This is something anybody, you know, if you come down to KABU and be a volunteer, you too can be trained.
It's not,
you know,
really that difficult. You know, the board is pretty simple, especially in today's world of electronics. I dare say anybody that can manage a cell phone could manage the board in the air room. So come on down and join us. But again, Per, thanks.
You bet.
I sure appreciate that. I've missed all of yous terribly. I hope you're all doing well. I've been having kind of a rough summer. My health's been up and down, so that's the only thing that's kept me away from you. Otherwise, I would have been here. And it's good to be back. I'm going to do my level best to stay here. I understand we're preempted next week.
Oh, that's right. It's a waterfront blues festival, and that goes from, I think, Friday through Tuesday. I guess Tuesday is actually July 4th. So
we won't be here next week, but we'll be back the week after that. And I'm very much hoping to get an interview with Gareth Pearce about what's been going on in this country as well as in Ireland. You may remember that name. She made quite a name for herself.
Whoops, somebody says our guest mic is not on. I have it. Let's see.
How about this one?
I don't know.
I don't hear it.
Hmm.
How about this one? Maybe I should move over.
Why don't you just come on and sit over here? We're having a little microphone difficulty, so we're going to change seats here.
Okay.
Okay, I'm back, or I'm here, and I understand we had some technical difficulty and we were only getting one side of the feed, but now I'm going to take over the one working mic for just a little bit until we can... Ah, there we go. I bet he's up now. But anyway, I'm Maura Cullen. Hello, and welcome back to Radio Free Ireland. And for those of you who weren't able to hear what I was saying just a bit earlier, to recap briefly, I've been away, I'm back, and I want to thank Per Fogarin for taking such good care of Radio Free Ireland while I've been absent. I want to apologise to all my long-time listeners for being away from the show. My health's been a little bit dodgy this summer, but I'm giving it the old fight, and it's good to be back here at KABU. That does me wonders anyway. In particular, there's a couple of things that I was driven from my sickbed to come in here and talk about today, just because things are getting so out of hand and ridiculous. And Per, I think you have a microphone now too.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
All right.
Somebody pressed the right button.
It was just one wee button. That's all it was.
Okay.
But anyway, and one thing in particular, of course, you know, I've been sickened, as have you all, by many of the actions and events that have been taking place in this illegal war and everything around it. But in particular, I was just struck dumb yesterday, and that doesn't happen often, by some of the stories coming out of Miami. And Perry, you talked about this a little earlier about these Haitian American fellas being called the Miami Seven, and the absolute hyperbole and slavering of the media, you know, the absolute foaming at the mouth. These guys looked so beside themselves with delight to have such a salacious story to talk about. And I'm talking about these seven black guys in Miami who have been jacked up on terrorism charges.
Well, I think even the mainstream media has kind of been having second thoughts. They've been sort of saying that, in fact, I think it was Attorney General Gonzalez or somebody in government said that they're thing was it was more aspirational than operational. In other words, it was kind of a thing in their heads more than anything else.
Yes, I did notice that most of the mainstream media are starting to back slowly away from this story. But still, you know, the damage is done. The hysteria is out there. And, you know, their basic goal was to premise the concept of homegrown cells. And this they have done. Whether these guys are quietly all dismissed later on is not the point, folks. The point is now that all these right-wing blowhards are now going to be talking about the Miami 7 every time they want to take your rights away from you. The reason this is such an important story to me is because I've lived it so many times already, and I want to warn those people I can that if they go back and look at the history of the Guildford 4 or the Birmingham 6, you know, it's almost like these guys went and took it verbatim, you know, and how to stir up hysteria. And I swear some of the quotes are exactly the same, you know, when I heard them talking about these seven fellas when they were first arrested. You know, I was wondering what decade I was in and what country I was in, because it was virtually the same sort of hyperbole that was going around the Birmingham 6. And I'm going to do my level best to get Gareth Pearce on the program for you so you can hear it from her, because she'll explain it a lot better than I ever could. But, you know, all I can say is same shite, different decade, different country. And don't be so easily fooled, you know. I know most of the folks that are smart enough to listen to cable are smart enough not to be swayed by all the drumbeat of terrorism that you hear. You know, like the North Korean missile was another good one. It had a satellite on it, folks. You know, in all of the hysteria I heard about that one, not once did I ever hear anyone admit that what was sitting on top of that rocket was a satellite, not a missile, not a nuclear weapon, a satellite. Rather changes the perception of things some, doesn't it? So I'm saying to folks that if they're feeling quite nervous about the concept of homegrown terror cells, they might want to go and see if they can't rent the film In the Name of the Father. That's a real good one about people being brought up on false charges and having their lives ruined, and also how the media plays right into their hands. So I would suggest to people that they remember the past when they listen to the bloviations of the present. And, you know, also in that vein, I've certainly been doing a lot of thinking about Gitmo lately. And also Bagram Air Force Base, because it seems like, well, they're slowly closing down Gitmo, or at least not bringing anyone new there in a while. There's been quite an increase in the population of enemy combatants, I believe is the euphemism they use nowadays. There's been quite an increase in the population of imprisoned enemy combatants at Bagram Air Force Base in Afghanistan, you know, that place that's often referred to as the Wild West, mm-hmm. Another fine euphemism of our own creation. And this is something that I've lost sleep over, the concept of prisoners of war, enemy combatants, people being held without charge, people being unable to access any due process whatsoever. These are things I lose sleep over, folks. Why? Because I've seen its outcome too many times. And for those of you who've been long-time listeners to Radio Free Ireland, I know how much love and respect people that love Ireland have for the memory of Bobby Sands and the 10 men who perished on hunger strike in 1981 in the prison of Loncash, Her Majesty's Mayor's Prison, just outside of Belfast in the north of Ireland. And Bobby Sands was a great symbol of resistance to tyranny, and that's why he still lives in the hearts of people all over the world. And there's no question that he will continue to live as an inspiration to those who are seeking freedom and justice, and those who suffer the lack of justice in this world. And certainly Bagram, Gitmo, and all those places being run with your tax dollars are foremost amongst the examples of people suffering a lack of justice in the world. And to that end, I'd like to share with you a little bit of the writings of Bobby Sands while he was imprisoned, before he died on hunger strike. And I'd like to remind you that everything that he and those 9 other brave lads, and certainly many more than that in Ireland alone, but elsewhere, you know, this is still going on, folks. This is going on right now. And as you listen to me read these words, please, please remember that there are hundreds of people in Gitmo right now that are feeling the exact same thing, if not worse. This is the battle for survival from the writings of Bobby Sands, 1954 to 1981, published by Irish Northern Aid Committee in May of 1981, directly after Bobby died. And this was actually written in January of 1979 by Bobby in Loncash and first published in Amphoblacht Republican News, January the 27th, 1979. The greatest part of each seemingly eternal day that I face is filled with thought. I have nothing else to help pass the time during the long, never-ending hours. Boredom and loneliness are terrible things, continual and unrelenting. I have but one weapon to overcome them, my own thoughts. To pass the time and to keep warm, I pace the floor. Sometimes I stand gazing out of the cell window at the grey barbed wire, or simply just sit upon my dirty damp mattress on the floor in the corner of my dungeon-like tomb. But all the while, I'm thinking of something, somebody, or someplace else. It may be deep, serious thought, or daydreaming to escape the reality of my nightmarish situation. For someone who is contented or unconcerned with any great worry, living what is termed an everyday life, you may find my psychological circumstances hard to comprehend, for two reasons. Firstly, my inability to describe the psychological struggle of myself and my 350 comrades. Secondly, it is terribly hard, if not inconceivable, to conjure up in one's imagination the pain and stress of psychological torture, or to know its many forms, or to understand its various effects. Imagine how it would feel to be locked up, naked in solitary confinement, 24 hours a day, and subjected to total deprivation of not only common everyday things, but of basic human necessities, such as clothes, fresh air, exercise, the company of other human beings. In short, imagine being entombed, naked and alone, for a whole day. For a whole day. What would it be like for 20 torturous months? Now, again, with this in mind, try to imagine just what it is like to be in this situation, in surroundings that resemble a pigsty, and you are crouched naked upon the floor, in a corner, freezing cold amid the lingering stench of putrefying rubbish, with crawling, wriggling white maggots all around you, fat, bloated flies pestering your naked body. The silence is nerve-wracking. Your mind is in turmoil. You're sitting, waiting, on the screws coming to your cell to drag you out to be forcibly bathed. You've heard and seen the horrible results of this from many of your comrades at mass. You know only too well what it means. The skin scrubbed from your body with heavy brushes. The screws have told you you're next. You wait all day just thinking. Your mind is wrecked. Maybe they've forgotten, you kid yourself. But you know they never forget. They don't come. The next day is the same, and the next, and the next. You become more and more depressed. For days your thoughts have been the same, a mass of fear, fearing what lies ahead. Consider that in the frame of mind every, consider being in that frame of mind every day, knowing in your mind that you're to be beaten nearly senseless, forcibly bathed, or held down to have your back passages examined or probed. These things are common facts of life in everyday H-block life. It is inconceivable to try to imagine what an 18-year-old naked lad goes through when a dozen or so screws slaughter him with batons, boots and punches, while dragging him by the hair along a corridor, or when they squeeze his privates until he collapses, or throw scalding water around his naked body. It's inconceivable for me to describe, let alone for you to imagine, our state of mind just sitting, waiting for this to happen. I can say that this physical and psychological torture of the H-blocks has brought many men to the verge of insanity. We are in a very, very bad state now. What will we be like at the end of the day, or in the years to come? My mind is scarred deep. It is as equally a worrying thought that we may end up unable to even think at all. With that in your mind, I'll leave off. Think about it, but just don't leave it at that. And that is the writings of Bobby Sands from the H-blocks of Longkesh Prison in 1979. And I thought I had something queued up for you, but we're in the midst of some technical flubs here. But, you know, I hope that you'll apologize for... I'd like to apologize, and I hope you'll forgive me for sharing that particular passage with you. I know that for a lot of you, you're very sensitive, and this is going to continue to disturb you for a while. But I think that that's only right and proper, and I hope you use that disturbed state of mind to motivate you to talk to your friends and family, to call your representatives, and to take whatever actions are open to you in order to change the disgraceful state of affairs at Guantanamo Bay prison camp and at Bagram Air Force Base in Afghanistan, and to never forget what is going on with these people that have not been charged, 80% of whom the Pentagon admits are innocent, and who have virtually no hope in their imprisonment. Here's a little tune, and then we'll come back and wrap up the program. You're listening to Radio Free Ireland.